This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
In 1966, the world was introduced to a new frontier of science fiction known as Star Trek. Since then, it has grown into a franchise spanning multiple TV series and motion pictures. People from all walks of life have grown up with Star Trek. It has molded them, taught them life lessons, and helped to build them into who they are. These are the stories of those fans. This is their Prime Direction.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Prime Direction. My name is Sean Ray, and wow, it has been months since I got to do this show. And there is a reason for that. The Prime Direction had to go on hiatus mainly because I was doing a project with the Simply Syndicated Network where we were reviewing every episode of the new Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, that was on CBS All Access, starting in September and just ending its run a couple of months ago. There was just too much recording to be done, so I had to do that show every week. I was also trying to keep Cosmic Potato going with new episodes coming out, so I decided to put this show on a little bit of a hiatus during that time. But I'm back, and I'm going to hopefully have a new episode for you guys every month for the next few months, at least until Discovery comes back, which I think they announced it would be January of 2019, and unless something changes between now and then. So before I get into the episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about what is going on here at the network, because we've made some changes, and I'm pretty excited about it, because I've called it the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network for a while, even though there was really only two shows on the network, and they were both mine. You know, I do Cosmic Potato with John Irons, where we talk about all kinds of movie stuff. We talk a lot about Marvel films, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, all that kind of stuff. And I also do this show. So I wanted to start to really build a network where some smaller podcasters, independent podcasters that aren't like your huge shows like The Nerdist that has tens of thousands of listeners. I wanted some of the smaller shows so that we could get together in one place on the internet. There's one site where you'd be able to find all of these shows, and they all kind of help one another because they're about the same kinds of things, you know, kind of nerd culture, movies, TV, that kind of stuff. And you'd be able to go to cosmicpotato.com and you'd be able to find all of these shows. So I reached out to a couple, a show called World War G that you've heard us talk about before. We've ran ads before. This Troy Wood and AJ and Colton are his co-stars, and they talk about a lot of the same kind of stuff that you'll hear on Cosmic Potato. You know, they talk about the movies that come out. They talk about the popular TV shows that they've been watching and stuff like that. So I'm excited to welcome them into the fold. And also there is a show on the network called Review-A-Mania, which is a couple of guys that I found on Reddit that do a show where they are reviewing each and every WrestleMania. So if you were into wrestling when you were a kid, then you can download this show and you can really enjoy what they have to talk about. It's really a lot of fun. And then John, who is my co-host over at Cosmic Potato, he has started his own podcast that I appear on from time to time, and some of the other people that you hear on, that you've heard on the Prime Direction, that you hear on Cosmic Potato, they appear on it every now and then. It's called Captain Game Show, and it is that. It is a game show, and John has a knack for coming up with games that play off of wordplay and riddles and rhymes and all that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of fun to play, and I think it's a lot of fun to listen to as well. So you can download that show. It's called Captain Game Show, and all of those are available at CosmicPotato.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict on the Android Store, SoundCloud. And I've built a new feed. If you go to wherever you normally get your podcasts, if you go to iTunes or whatever, if you go there and you search for not just Cosmic Potato, because that's going to pull up the other podcast, search for Cosmic Potato Podcast Network, and you will find a feed that I have built that will have the new episode of every show that comes on the network. So when I release this episode, it will be on that feed. When World War G releases a new episode later in the week, it'll be on that feed. Review-a-mania, Captain Game Show, all of those, every time a new episode comes out, it will be on that feed. So you can download that one feed, and every time a new show comes out, you'll get a notification and you'll be able to download it and listen to it. So make sure you download that from wherever you get your podcast app from, and you'll stay on top of everything that we do here on the network. Now, as far as this episode of The Prime Direction, I got to talk to Joe Crow. Now, Joe is a guy that I met doing conventions here in Birmingham. I do the Magic City Con every summer. I lead some panels there, and also the sci-fi fantasy festival that they have at the Hoover Library here in the Birmingham area. I do panels at that convention as well. Well, Joe does conventions at both of those, but Joe is also a big deal at, which he may deny that, but he is a big deal at Dragon Con, which is a huge comic book convention or sci-fi fantasy convention over in Atlanta, Georgia, that happens every year around Labor Day. Think Comic-Con in the South. It's the South's version of Comic-Con. He leads a track of panels at that convention that deal a lot with science fiction and fantasy, but also like classic sci-fi TV series. Last summer, he got to interview Wallace Shawn, who you'll know from movies like The Princess Bride, and he was also in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, stuff like that. So Joe knows a lot about science fiction, and he knows a lot about Star Trek. And he's a freelance writer. He writes for some political websites and things like that out of the Birmingham area. And I was excited to get to talk to him on The Prime Direction. He's somebody that I've known for a couple of years, and I've gotten to do panels with him, and I've had him on Cosmic Potato several times, but this was the first time I was able to just sit down and have a one-on-one conversation with him about something that we both enjoy talking about. So, enjoy this episode. Be sure to find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a 5-star rating and a review so that we can help more people find the show. Make sure you join the Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast group on Facebook, because that is the group where we discuss things for all of the shows on the network. If you want to get in touch with me to be on the show, you can contact me on the Facebook group, or you can send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com, and I would love to talk to anybody that loves Star Trek. Everybody has a story that of their fandom with Star Trek, and I want to get as many of those as possible. I do a show every month, so send me a message, and I will email you back, and we'll arrange a time for you to be on. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Joe Crow. Have you lived in Birmingham your whole life?
Yes. Well, Alabama, yes. I'm from Clanton, Alabama.
Oh, okay. Okay, which is about halfway between here and Montgomery.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
where the listeners, if you look on the line, look up Clanton, Alabama, and you'll see a giant water tower that kind of looks like a peach and kind of looks like something else. You be the judge.
yes, that's us.
Right. So
like a mile from my mom's house.
Oh, what was life like growing up?
Oh, it's good stuff. We, my dad was a veterinarian, and we had a horse farm.
Oh, okay.
So, and it was crazy outside stuff that we pretty much did all the time. We had, at various points, between 40 and 60 horses.
Oh, wow.
So there was a lot of horse feeding going on, and me and my brother, my brother rode and competed. And I just fed them.
So, is your brother as big into sci-fi and stuff as you are?
He is not. He watches it. He is sort of he's a horse guy. He still does that. That's his job now. He is a horse trainer and a blacksmith and. He's doing his thing, and he kind of likes whatever his daughters are into, and yeah. I'm the same way. I'm totally the same way.
Yeah.
But we kind of diverged on the hardcore sci-fi fandom.
What do you do for a living?
I am a freelance writer.
Okay.
I write for a political website. I write for I've edited books. I've edited role-playing games. I've written website copy for. I've worked at an ad agency. That kind of thing.
Okay. Tell me about your earliest memory of Star Trek.
My earliest memory of Star Trek was I was introduced to Star Trek by my Uncle Jeff. He was super into it. He's about 12 years older than me, and so when he would babysit, Star Trek was on syndication at the time. So, and he had the VHS copies, and sometimes Laserdisc. So those things, you know, they would heat up.
Yeah.
And so you would get like a good 30 minutes, and then you would have to stop.
And let it cool down, yeah.
Yeah. So we watched Star Trek on VHS and the movies on Laserdisc, the early movies.
Yeah.
On Laserdisc, and that was my first intensive introduction to all of sci-fi. So that Star Trek to me kind of holds a place because of that.
How old do you think you were at that point?
Maybe 7, 8, 9.
Oh, okay. Cool. So pretty early.
Oh, yeah.
What was it about that show that you think connected with you?
I think what it was is I was also a big comic book guy.
Mm-hmm.
From a very young age. I also blame my uncle for that. but... It was seeing stuff that I had only read about in comics and then seeing Star Trek act out, you know, good guys fighting bad guys
right. And
shooting each other with laser guns. And so that was I'm being very nonspecific. Of course, it's phasers, not lasers, but it was just a natural evolution.
Yeah,
it was a natural change or evolution. I'll stay with evolution.
Do you think that when you first started getting into the show, did your love of that show kind of surpass the other stuff that you were into? What kind of other stuff were you into at the time?
Any sci-fi TV, I was all in for that. Of course, I was, we're talking mid-70s, so Star Trek was done and in reruns.
Right.
By that time. So through that was my gateway for all the other sci-fi that I was into, from movies and everything else.
Yeah.
But I was into, Buck Rogers, the Incredible Hulk TV show.
What, did you have, any Star Trek toys?
You know, they, what was there at that time? Mego had the 8-inch Star Wars figures.
Yeah.
I think that was the extent of my Star Wars merchandising. They had a handful of 8-inch figures, and that's all that I had. And even though those were hard to come by, in later years, as a grown-up,
yeah,
that's fun to say, I was able to get the new Star Trek action figures and merchandise of, but at the time, there wasn't so much.
Yeah, I've talked to people on the show about that before, and there's a big difference between people that grew up watching the original series and people that grew up watching The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, because by the time those shows came along, you know, George Lucas had shown them how to do marketing with and merchandising with Star Wars. So they started making all the action figures and the models and things like that. When you go back to the late 60s and the 70s and they're making Star Trek toys, a lot of what they did was just take stuff that was already out and just slap Star Trek on the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
And call it a Star Trek toy. But yeah, the Mego, I think Mego, they were the company that got into everything. I mean, they had a license to do just about, they were like the Funko Pop of the 70s, I guess.
No, they really were. They exactly were.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, most of your toy companies nowadays, you do either or.
Right.
Marvel or DC, that kind of thing. But Mego did everything. They did, in fact, in addition to the Star Trek guys, I had a Mego Planet of the Apes guy.
Yeah.
I had Batman and Hulk and Spider-Man. So, yeah, Mego. Now, you know, today the deluxe there are some deluxe collector action figure companies that make Mego-ish or Mego homages.
Yeah.
In action figure form. So it's kind of a transformative thing, or it was a touch point, I think, for a lot of dorks. And yeah. I mean that with love.
And it had to make Mego a lot of money, because if you look at those dolls, most of them were the same body. They just swapped the head and put different clothes on them. So they're all the same toy.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. So was your Star Trek fandom, as you were getting older and you were going to school and you got into high school and stuff, was Star Trek something that you felt like you could wear it as a badge of honor, or something that you had to hide? You know, everybody has a different experience with that kind of stuff.
It was a weird time. I expressed the geekiness, like probably a lot of people, with a select few, like with my gaggle of friends.
Yeah.
As far as being known as the sci-fi dork, I think that came later. I ended up being a professional sci-fi geek, which is awesome. But at the time, I think the sci-fi geekiness was not my primary mode of it's not what most people knew about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, when you got into Star Trek, the show, like you said, the show was already off the air. So did you ever have an inkling? Did you just think that, okay, this is just a show that I liked when I was a kid? Did you ever have an inkling that it was going to come back one day?
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. I was super into magazines, sci-fi magazines like Starlog that covered all the TV and the movies. And, of course, there were rumors for years and years. And we thought, well, maybe someday. But really, in between that time of the series before I was born, And the first movie, there was no thought that this was going to be a thing again. There were books. I think the gist of fandom at that time was, well, we have the books now,
right?
And that's all we're ever going to have,
right?
And I didn't know till years later that they almost did a new Star Trek series before the first movie.
Phase two, yeah.
Had no idea while it was happening, except maybe I think there was a paragraph in Starlog. But it got to a point, and I didn't know many details about that till much later. But no, I never thought that this was going to be a thing again. In fact, when I didn't know that there was even going to be the first movie until I think it was the back page of a comic book in 1 month. So that was a breakthrough. That was a huge breakthrough.
Did you see that movie when it was in the theater?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. Okay.
I saw it pretty quickly once it got to home video on the previously discussed Laserdisc.
Yeah.
But my uncle, the gateway, the co-conspirator who dragged me into all this stuff, he got the big laser disc, so I got to see the motion picture in glorious laser disc form with the I knew that it was out, but there was no, I don't even remember how big a box office, how big it was at the box office. I saw Star Wars, the first Star Wars, in the theater,
mm-hmm.
but I don't remember going to see Star Trek. I don't know that it was, certainly was not as big as the first Star Wars, but yeah. It wasn't until Wrath of Khan where I was like, okay, now I've got to see all these movies.
Right. Yeah, and those movies, they started cranking them out like every 2 years. The first four movies came out like every 2 years through 1986. Did you like the movies as much as you liked the TV show? Or was it just a whole different ballpark for you?
I think I did. It was the TV show offered different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the movies were... Or the movies with the original cast were, it was just cool. Even though the movies were super cool to me because they took what they could do with the series, the original series, and they just went nuts with it.
Yeah.
And they took the germs of the action stuff in the original series, and did blockbuster sci-fi action flicks with it, but the characters were still the same.
Mm-hmm.
They remained the same characters as in the 60s series. So there, it wasn't like they were just doing hardcore sci-fi action flicks and named these characters Captain Kirk and Spock. It was still them.
Right.
They were just doing different stuff. So I think I liked them both independently.
So 1987 rolls around and they announce that, or probably 86, that they announced that there was going to be a new TV series. Were you excited about that show, or were you just like, oh no, they can't make a new show. They can't make another one without Kirk and Spock and McCoy and all that.
Well, I was super excited, yeah. To be honest. I was tickled that... And really, Star Trek The Next Generation launched a whole new realm of geekiness, because you didn't have to watch it during the time frame of the three channels at 7 o'clock on a weeknight, you know.
Mm, yeah.
It came on the weekends when you actually were not at school, and sometimes super late at night, which was great, because who sleeps when you're a teenager on the weekends? And I thought it was just a crazy neat thing. I thought it was. I didn't know what it was really going to be when I first started, but I plopped down in front of the TV that first night on when it debuted, and it was I was super excited. It felt like Star Trek from that very first episode. It felt like, well, now we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Like now I'm back into this cool thing that previously all I had was a couple or three movies at that point and the old series and the books, of course. But I felt like this is pushing everything forward. Like it's everything's new again. So it was a huge deal when The Next Generation came out for me.
How do you feel about the first two seasons of TNG? Because there's a lot of fans out there that go by the thinking of growing. There's a saying called growing the beard, which is kind of like jumping the shark when a show goes too far. Growing the beard means that a show gets better at a certain point, where TNG got better after Riker grew a beard. You know, so how do you feel about the first two seasons of Star Trek?
I dug them just because it was. I mean, compared to having no Star Trek,
true. Yeah.
Versus, oh my gosh, now I've got Star Trek every week.
Yeah.
So they to me hold a special place. Now, I agree that once Riker grew the beard, things stepped up.
Yeah.
it was, but there's some stuff about that the first couple of years that were really interesting and moving. And I mean, I even like the very first episode with the cameo by McCoy at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. That's yeah. good character stuff. And please refresh my memory. The death of Tasha Yar.
That was in season one, yeah.
Okay, so that was pre-beard.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. That knocked me for a loop because cast members don't get killed.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of got everybody's expectations up because that was towards the end of the first season. So everybody was thinking, oh, they're going to kill off a main character every year. But that's really the only one that they ever actually killed off.
That is true. That is true. And I kind of dug her. She was one of my faves. And for her to be, I just assumed they would get out of it.
Yeah.
Her death, her, and come on, evil pudding. Come on. Now that we talk about it, I'm mad again.
Well, you were talking about phase two a few minutes ago. You know, a lot of the stories for season one of TNG were recycled scripts from what phase two was supposed to be.
I had heard that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So The Next Generation is on the air for several years and you know, everybody loves it, but it's kind of the same thing as Star Trek. It's a crew on a starship going around the galaxy having adventures and all this. And then around season six, we get Deep Space Nine. And it's a whole different thing because it's not a starship, it's a space station, and they're going to be in one. And it's going to be the rifleman instead of, you know, wagon train.
Uh-huh.
So, did you like Deep Space Nine when it started? Do you like it now?
Well, I will say this. I liked it when it started. I, again, like Next Generation, I was there for episode one.
Yeah.
Like the night it debuted, it was on like Birmingham Channel 21, I think.
Yeah.
And it came on like on a Saturday. So I was fired up. And again, it was super Star Trek-y, and it had it tied in continuity wise to Next Generation.
Yeah.
The Borg episode with Locutus of Borg, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty certain of that. But oh yeah, Deep Space Nine. I was super into it from the first. To be frank, it lost me later. It was kind of the opposite Next Generation. Next Generation kind of progressively got better for me, while Deep Space Nine progressively got less so.
Was there anything in particular about it that you were not enjoying?
The metaphysical, it's not, that's the wrong way to put it. The stuff with the Paw Wraiths and Sisko.
All the Bajoran spiritual stuff.
That kind of pulled me out some. I don't know what was it about it. It had nothing to do with whether it seemed Star Trek-y or not. It seemed like that could have been anybody. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be Sisko.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it fit him to be involved in all that business. It felt like that they spent way too much time on that and not so much time of Sisko being Sisko.
Right.
There was plenty of that. There was a lot of that. But I don't know. It took a lot away from Sisko and the show, in my opinion. So that's what kind of pulled me out of my... I mean, I still watched it.
Yeah.
but it kind of pulled me out.
Yeah, that was the thing in our... Especially, like you said, in our local market here in Birmingham. It was like we had Star Trek... Instead of just having one episode of Star Trek every week, all of a sudden we had two. You know, we could watch back-to-back episodes of Star Trek. And we didn't have DVRs back then, so they would... They would show it on Saturday evening, and then they would show it again late Saturday night, and then they'd show it again on Sunday night, you know, so you could always catch it. But
and that's I'm not gonna lose the feeling that that's crazy. The idea that from going to zero Star Trek to having two whole new Star Treks every week.
Yeah.
That's insane. And of course, now today, you know, there's like six DC Comics TV shows every week. I would not have been able to handle that at age 17. but yeah, I mean, two adventures in the Star Trek universe when before that there had been zero.
Yeah,
it was a crazy time.
Well, sometime around 94. They announced that the Next Generation was going to end. They were going to end the series, and that they were going to make a feature film. Now, knowing what you know now about the film that came out, would you have rather they do that or just keep making the show?
Ooh, that is tough. I was so fired up for the movie. Because Captain Kirk is awesome. Admiral mm-hmm. Kirk was awesome. Captain Picard is awesome. And having them, that was our Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
Superman v. Batman of its time. Like the fact that, because I always was hoping, you know, that on the Next Generation TV show that more and more of the original cast would be involved somehow. And, you know, very few of them ended up doing that. But maybe they were just saving Captain Kirk for that one movie, which could have been better, shall we say. It could have been, but they could have kept on doing Next Gen for another. Yeah, they could have kept that plugging along and. That would have been fine by me. I still wanted to see Captain Kirk meet Picard, and there were parts of Generations that were really good.
Yeah.
And then other parts.
Yeah. Well, I never understood at the time. I guess thinking back now, I know that it probably had a lot to do with actors just not wanting to do the show anymore. But, you know, they made an X-Files movie without ending the show. You know, they just, the movie was filmed during the hiatus or whatever. The movie came out, and then there was more show after that. So,
yeah,
theoretically, they could have kept doing the show, but I guess they were gearing up to try and do a new series. They were going to do Voyager after that. But I wanted to go back real quick because you and I both live in the same town. About the time that they were filming Generations, Birmingham had a Star Trek convention at the Civic Center that Mark Leonard was at. Did you go to that convention?
I feel like I did.
I just remember, I mean, I was there. I was 16, I think, at the time. And I remember listening to Mark Leonard telling his, you know, his stories, and people were asking him questions. And somebody asked him how he felt about the character of Sarek being killed. And he starts going into this long story about how he was at another convention and they were playing the episode in the background and he just happened to hear Spock say the words, "Sarek has died." And he didn't know that his character had died.
What?
I guess he didn't read that part of the script. He just read his part. But so he said, "Yeah, I didn't like it." That's just something that stood out from that convention. Plus the fact that I saw somebody get him to autograph a poster for Generations, and I didn't understand why, because he wasn't in that movie.
No. Yeah. He was already out of there. Yeah. By that time.
How'd you feel about Voyager when it started?
I have very conflicted emotions about Voyager. I was not super into it, really, for its entire length. It never quite grabbed me. The initial conceit of it, the idea that you know that a starship just gets lost. I mean, I like the idea, and there was just something about it, and I don't know why it never grabbed me. To date, I don't think I've seen all the episodes. I've seen some, and there are some good ones, and it tied more into some Star Trek stuff, a history, a continuity stuff, than the other series did. But at the same time, I approve of them trying to break out of the Star Trek box, which they were in. And even in Deep Space Nine, they were still kind of in a box in a lot of ways. But with Voyager, they attempted to do it's hard to put my finger on. They tried to do original series stuff with new series characters that had not really, to me, they'd not really earned it.
Right.
It was like these guys were brand new and they had not. Now, granted, I mean, the show was on a number of years. Most of the characters they did, you know, ramp, like they dig into their characters and make them, you know, deep and meaningful. But like the addition of Seven of Nine, who grew on me as well, it seemed like they were adding a wacky neighbor.
Yeah.
like Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch, you know. We're out of ideas. We got to bring in somebody else. We got nothing. So Voyager was. I think Voyager overall is my least favorite of the Star Treks.
I think, in my opinion, I've been going back and doing like a rewatch. I rewatched all of Deep Space Nine last year, and this year I've been rewatching Voyager. And there are some really excellent episodes of Voyager. I mean, some of the stories that they did in Voyager are some of my favorite Star Trek stories altogether. But to get to those, you have to wade through a lot of crap. You know? And there are a lot of the actors that were on Voyager, I'm sure they're very nice people, but their performances never really grabbed me. I'm not saying that about every single character on the show. There were some that really stood out. I thought Robert Picardo was great on Voyager as the Doctor. And I think that Tim Russ, his portrayal of Tuvok is pr- probably the best portrayal of a Vulcan that I've, like, a full-blooded, you know, this is how Vulcans are. I thought he did the best portrayal of a Vulcan.
I guess I never thought about that, but that's true for me. I agree with you. With Spock, you had the out that he was, you know, a mudblood. If he acted like a human, you're like, or if he acted un-Vulcan-like, you're like, well, that's his twist. You know, that's the, but with Tuvok, there was none of that. So he was just a Vulcan.
Right.
And, I didn't think about that until just now.
Which Star Trek series do you think of as being your series?
I mean, technically it would be Next Generation, but really that's a toughie. In a way, I feel like maybe the movies. I have more ownership of the movies because the first series was before I was born.
Yeah.
And Next Generation, Next Generation, I think, helped solidify my Star Trek geekiness. But the movies were kind of the combo platter. So I feel like maybe I kind of have a little more ownership of the Star Trek movies than I have of any of the shows.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I ask that question of everybody that comes on the show, and it's always different. You know, I asked Michael Jan Friedman was here, and yeah, he's written a lot of Star Trek novels. He's written novels of the original series, and he's written novels for the Next Generation. And most of the novels of his that I read were Next Generation novels, because that's my series. That's the one that I go back to the most. But I asked him, I said, which set of these characters do you like writing the best? And he said the original series. He enjoys writing those books more than the Next Generation. So, you know, it's interesting. It's every person that I ask, I get a whole different thing. But now, what about Enterprise? Were you into that show?
Well, I was, yeah. Around the time of Enterprise, I was writing. I had begun my geek journalism career working for a website, now defunct, called Zealot.com around 1999 and 2000. And so I got to kind of be there right after Voyager. In fact, one of the first articles I think I wrote they actually paid me, which was crazy. Honestly, I would have done it for free. I think one of the final article, the first articles I wrote was like about the last episode of Deep Space Nine. And when Enterprise came along, I was already a few years into it. And I had already started going to and doing sci-fi media stuff at conventions, like appearing on panels,
right,
and writing reviews and I'd been writing reviews the whole time. So I was kind of there at the beginning with Enterprise, and I was into it at first, and it fell off for me a little bit as well. But it was a crazy neat thing when it started.
Yeah. At what point do you think that it fell off? Because when I talk to most people, most fans about Enterprise, most of what I get is that they didn't like the show at first, but then they fell in love with it in the last season, and then it was canceled. And there's a reason for that. The reason for that is that in the last season, the network finally pulled back and let them do what they wanted to do. But I was just interested because what you said kind of sounds the opposite. You liked it at first and then it fell off. So what was it about the show that made you fall away from it?
Well, they had a big list of characters, huge cast, like every Star Trek did. And then they very quickly stopped focusing on any of them except, Scott Bakula. who is great, and T'Pol. That was it, really, as far as... It was really more about the two of them, or not together, but it was really more about them than it was about the whole cast. I couldn't really tell you a lot about what the rest of the cast did, while in the previous series, every cast member had a vital role. Maybe they weren't the focus of every episode, certainly, but they were in the ensemble. Mm-hmm. But most of the Enterprise cast members were not so much interchangeable as just bland.
Yeah.
Now, but there were, and of course, you know, from the beginning, by placing it in the timeline where they did, it was like opening up the floodgates to the Star Trek geekdom and saying, find the errors.
Yeah.
Tell us what's wrong this week. But it still was, I still dug it. But they, and then, as I said, so the whole progression of Enterprise, I was, I guess, at my busiest as a geek. So I was kind of had my hands on it all the time, and it, I didn't watch it every week. And for me to not watch a Star Trek series every single week, that was kind of telling in retrospect now that I say it.
Yeah.
It was kind of episodic, or no, even when it continued, like the episodic stuff was not as fun for me as the standalone episodes. And so, yeah, I was... Now, overall, I think the series was good, as a complete package. And I say that because at one Dragon Con on the Star Trek track, they put a couple of dorks like me on the same panel with Connor Trinneer, who was on the show. And I was being critical of the show, and I realized, this is this dude's work. What am I saying?
Yeah.
And he was so nice and so funny. And I felt bad in retrospect that I was, and I certainly wasn't slamming his performance. He was good. But that there were, I feel like I really lit into it, and he was sitting right there. So in a way, I feel bad. But then the series ended quite terribly.
Oh, yeah. The finale was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
And not just because it was a bad episode, but because it's like they didn't get their own finale. Like, they had to turn their finale into an episode of The Next Generation. And it wasn't really fair for them.
Exactly. We had already said we had not said our farewells to Riker and Troy because we had them in movies by then.
Yeah.
So we didn't, I don't know, it felt like an unnecessary addition to the story. Like, we had, seeing Riker do his thing and in that last episode, it took away from the fact that, you know, we're going to see Riker again, but the Enterprise crew, probably not.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let me ask you this. You said that your favorite Star Trek is the six films that had the original series characters in them. What about the four movies with the Next Generation cast in them? Are you fans of those movies?
Diminishing returns.
Yeah, okay.
Like, progressively, they got, and I saw those in the theater, progressively, they got less and less cool. They, I liked a lot of stuff about Generations. The Kirk stuff, until the end.
Yeah.
That Ooh, and I think I'm still mad about that too. Now that speaking of that and Tasha Yar, but the now the next standalone film, First Contact, really good.
Yeah, it was a great movie. Yeah,
that was what they should have done the whole time. But then the one after that, Insurrection, is that right?
Yes.
That one, I wanted to throw things at the screen. That was so, it was unavoidably a subpar episode of the series. The only thing I remember kind of liking about it was this weird scene in a bathtub with Riker and Troy. What was that?
Where she was shaving him, yeah.
Yeah. Why are you shaving the man's beard? But yeah, so out of it, it just seemed like out of context. It seemed like they could have done this very episode in, you know, 40 something minutes on a regular episode of the show. It had no, all the other movies to that point had pushed the series further. Like they had progressed the characters and done a thing. But this one was just, it was like, oh crap, we got to do a movie. And they banged this one out. And I was not pleased. I walked out going, why? And well, and I say why, what I mean is, it just wasn't fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't Star Trek Next Generation-y type fun. And at that point, we were nearing, like, maximum saturation of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So the series at that time were slamming it every week. You know, boom, boom, boom. And they were cranking out stuff. So Star Trek at that point wasn't super special. Because you had multiple hours of it on television every week for free. And the guys who had graduated to the movies were not carrying their weight anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as this movie goes. So that one was I said to myself, well, this is the worst of the Star Trek movies until the next one. And that's when they blew out of the water the old Star Trek rule, like every other movie's the good one. This was two in a row that were
yeah, that's right. Nemesis.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was gonna mention before we talk about Nemesis, you know who Michael Piller was, right? He was he was a writer on The Next Generation and Voyager 2, I think. He wrote the script, or he wrote on the script for Insurrection, and he wrote a book it didn't come out until after he died. I think it was called Fade In, and you can download it for free online. But it's talking about, it starts, the start of the book is him being asked to write the next Star Trek movie, and he just kind of works through the process of how, you know, it came to the screen. And he published all of his story treatments that he did. And if you read the first story treatment, it's a completely different movie from what we finally got in Nemesis. I don't know that it would have been a better movie, because there was a lot of weird stuff in there. I mean, the original treatment was going to have Picard in the entire movie, but he wasn't going to be played by Patrick Stewart the whole time, because they were going to go to a planet that has a Fountain of Youth property or whatever, and he was going to turn into a younger Picard and be played by a younger guy through most of the movie, you know. And so when he turned into treatment, they said, we can't do it this way, because then you've got most of the movie and Patrick's not even in it.
You know? Yeah.
And then he had a sit-down meeting with Brent Spiner, and Brent Spiner, a lot of times the actors, they don't ever meet all of the writers in the writing room. You know, they'll meet the head writer, you know, and they'll talk with them and stuff like that. Well, Michael Piller wasn't the head writer on The Next Generation, not the whole time. And he had met Brent Spiner, but Brent didn't realize how much of the scripts that Michael wrote. You know, so he said in this meeting, Brent told him in this meeting, "I'm not sure you can write my character well." And he said, "I've been writing your character for 5 years." So I thought that was pretty funny. But okay, so Nemesis, you didn't like it.
I want to sidebar for a second. I forgot to mention one thing about Enterprise that,
okay,
to the detriment of, I think everybody else that I've ever really spoken to, man, that I love that theme song.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
I'm okay with it. I think the fact that so many people were so angry about it having a theme song made me like it more.
Yeah.
And I'm super into it. The little trivia bit that it was in Patch Adams before it was on Enterprise.
Now, I didn't know that. That's the first I've heard that. Wow.
Oh, good. I like to throw out the trivia, but yeah, Rod Stewart sang it in Patch Adams with it was a weeper with Robin Williams, and then they put it in, and I think some Broadway dude sang it. It wasn't Rod Stewart. It just sounded like him.
Yeah.
But just the fact that it was just different. Instead of just doing the haunting orchestral, you know, the typical haunting Star Trek orchestral thing, they said, you know what, let's do a Rod Stewart song. Boom! I felt like, okay, this is going somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they were trying their best to be the un-Star Trek at the time, because they had a theme song instead of just symphonic music. They didn't even have Star Trek in the title the first couple of seasons.
It was just
called Enterprise. And plus the fact that it takes place in their past, still our future, but their past, instead of going forward like all the other shows had done. But okay, so what did you not like about Nemesis?
Okay, but back to Nemesis. I felt like Nemesis had nowhere to go but up after the previous movie, and you could kind of tell, the actors are great, the characters are neat, but it felt like everybody was done. It felt like everybody involved with it was looking at their watch.
Yeah.
It felt like they were like, oh, why aren't we still playing these guys? And it didn't feel like that through six films with the original cast. And it wasn't like any of the, and think about this though, if you compare it, you know, the original cast, they were close to retirement age throughout, you know, those six movies. They're doing movies based on a job they had 30 years previous.
Mm-hmm.
But the Next Generation cast, they were like the Next Generation show was the first thing for many of them. And I think they were anxious to get moving, to do other things. And I don't know that the story showed that feeling. And maybe the writers or the creators felt similarly, but it didn't feel like they had anything left in the tank. It felt to me like they were just done. And the killing off, that was not necessary.
Yeah.
I was over that as soon as it happened. And the return of Wesley was kind of hyped in the geek corners, and then he didn't make the final cut of the movie, as I recall.
If you watch the widescreen edition, you can see him off to the side in the wedding scene.
And but, that asked more questions than it answered, because he had been traveling the universe with...
Yeah, yeah. All of his lines got cut, yeah.
Yeah. And by that time, Will Wheaton had kind of become a geek celebrity. You know, he had kind of started doing writing and conventions, and ramping up his geek presence. So we were all sort of excited to have Wesley back in the fold. And then,
yeah.
So that was kind of a disappointment. But
you know what I think it is, that the guy, and I can't remember, I don't have it in front of me, but the guy that directed the movie, I don't think he was a Star Trek fan. I don't think he knew these characters the way that we did, so he didn't realize that Wesley was a big deal for the show, you know. So when he cut it out,
I remember this now.
Yeah,
I remember writing about this now. They brought him in because he was a brand new guy,
yeah,
and they wanted like a fresh perspective. When Star Trek doesn't really need that,
right?
Star Trek doesn't, that's not really something Star Trek calls for. I think you got to have somebody who has a connection.
Yeah.
And I think Nemesis may have proved it, but I definitely recall them, like the tagline for this guy was never done anything Star Trek before.
Yeah.
When in retrospect, maybe that should have been rethought.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. So, now we're kind of at the same point that you were at the end of the original series, because once Enterprise went off the air and once Nemesis came out, we pretty much thought Star Trek was done. There wasn't any. They weren't going to make anything else. There were no more movies going to come out. There wasn't another series going to come out, and so it just kind of disappeared for several years. Did you think that Star Trek was just a thing of the past at that point?
I think that I needed a break.
Yeah.
I felt like we were just saying, Star Trek Nemesis kind of showed that the actors needed a break. It felt like that we had gotten beyond, we had gone over the cliff as far as, or we'd gone like the apex, like Star Trek had reached critical mass.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, we've had multiple series running at once, a movie series running at the same time, and I think it had just run out of gas. So, no joke, in a way, when it ended, or when the Nemesis came out and that was over and the series were done, or when Enterprise was done, well, especially when Enterprise was done, because, you know, the last couple of episodes, eek, but I felt like, okay, we're on a break. We need a break, and I think we all assumed it's going to come back someday, but give it some time. You know, take it easy for a while. You know, Right. Kick the feet up. And I think I don't think it was really personally for me. I didn't really meet the end of Nemesis and the end of Enterprise with sadness so much as like, well, I know it's coming back, so I'm content to let it sit for a while, because creatively I felt like they were it wasn't so much they were spinning their wheels, it was like they were digging their wheels into the mud and trying to get out desperately. So yeah, and I didn't feel like a loss or the fact that it was never coming back. I felt like we're on vacation.
Yeah.
And I felt like I needed it, and I felt like the Star Trek franchise needed it. Now, immediately, they started talking, or, you know, in the geek circles about, well, there's going to be a new series next fall. They're already working on it. And that didn't happen. And I'm kind of glad it didn't. They needed the break.
Yeah, there was rumors that went around for a long time that they were going to make another series that was going to be set like 200 years after The Next Generation, and they were going to move the timeline that way and all that.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. But our vacation ended up lasting about 4 years, and what we finally got was the Kelvin universe, the J.J. Abrams reboot. Were you excited about that movie? You know, a lot of fans did not want to see new actors play those characters. How did you feel about it?
I remember being pretty excited.
Yeah.
Because it was and I didn't know going in, or rather I tried desperately to avoid spoilers, I didn't know going in that they were going to tie it in. I thought, okay, you know,
yeah,
movie.
I didn't either. Yeah.
And I thought, okay, we're just doing new movies with, and there was something about the original cast, the original series characters that in a lot of ways had been missing from the ensuing Star Trek series. There was a lot about Captain Kirk that did not exist in Picard and Riker. And there was a lot about Spock that didn't exist in anybody else. A lot about McCoy that didn't. And so what I'm saying is there was something iconic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that word is overused. But there was something about those original series characters that I was excited to see them again, even if they were played by new people. I felt like that was a natural evolution. And now in my mind, I think ideally I would have wanted them to carry Next Generation forward or, you know, just to keep moving forward. But I was kind of super excited to see the old characters again.
Yeah.
And in new stuff.
What do you feel about that movie series as a whole, now that we've had three of them?
As a whole, it doesn't really hold up as well as like the first three movies in the original series, the original movie series. The first movie, I was kind of into. I was okay with it. It was the characters were back. You know, Kirk was very Kirk-like.
Mm-hmm.
But the second movie was pretty rotten. it really, it had the air of Nemesis about it to me.
Yeah,
and I thought, they don't need the break. They haven't done four series and multiple movies. This is only their second movie. So Into Darkness really kind of, I thought, okay, I'm done with it. For the first time, I really thought, okay, this is Star Trek and the movies is, if this is how the movies are going to be, I think I'm out.
Yeah.
Now, again, I still went to see them.
Yeah.
And the third one was better than the second one, but the bar was so low.
Right. Yeah.
And the third one, they stopped trying to be. But I think it wasn't so much they stopped trying to live up to the. That's a wrong way to put it. They didn't stop trying to live up to the Star Trek legacy or whatever. They tried to do a cool story with what they had.
Mm-hmm.
But what they had established in the first movie and in tiny parts of the second. So they were just carrying that forward. While the first Star Trek movie with the first of the Kelvin Star Treks, they had a hard slog ahead of them. They had to, you know, revamp the whole thing. And by the third one, in some ways, they were already... And in my mind, to me, they had to dig their way out of the second one, which they did.
Yeah.
But the second one still, like I don't want to go back and watch it. It's just, like, I've seen it once.
Yeah.
And unlike most of the other movies, I don't have to see it anymore. I'm kind of done.
Yeah.
And the third one's okay. You know, it's the third one is adequate. Not bad like... Nemesis and Insurrection, but it's adequate. It's okay.
Yeah, I think the third one felt more like Star Trek than especially the second one did.
Oh yeah.
I think that had a lot to do with Simon Pegg, because Simon Pegg is a Star Trek fan, and he knows the show, you know, and he was writing on that one. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you feel about the rumors that the fourth one will be directed by Quentin Tarantino and it'll be rated R?
okay.
Is that the first you're hearing of that?
I had heard, but I didn't know that wow.
There's nothing official. There's a lot of rumors going around that Quentin Tarantino is going to make. I don't know if it's going to be the same series. I don't know if it's going to have the same actors. I don't know what his story would be, you know, but
yeah.
There's rumors that the next Star Trek film that comes out will be a Tarantino movie.
Okay. I feel like, I mean, I have liked some of Tarantino's movies. I think I have an inkling of what his style is.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really change from movie to movie. It's just like, okay, this is Tarantino. And I don't know how Star Trek fits into that.
I none of his movies were science fiction.
No.
You know, he does westerns and ninja stuff and gangster stuff and all that. Which I guess you can do that in a sci-fi setting or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that it won't be a good movie, because I don't know, because I'm a Tarantino, I've always been a Tarantino fan. Some of the stuff that I've seen of him lately in the news makes me think that he's not as good of a person as.
Yeah, agreed. It's tough to separate.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes.
But yeah, I've always been a fan of his movie since I saw Pulp Fiction. I thought I saw Pulp Fiction when I was 17, and I loved it. And I've loved just about everything that he's come out with since, but none of that was anything that I even imagined could be Star Trek. And I don't know that he can do anything else. You know, I don't want to see, you know, Discovery had a couple of F-bombs dropped and it had some violent images that we weren't used to seeing in Star Trek, but it wasn't overdone. Tarantino, you know, that's his bag. That's what, you know.
That's his thing.
Yeah. So,
There are like 10 directors that I would have, if you said, make me a list of people you want to see do Star Trek.
Yeah.
Or like if you said, hey, who do you think would make a good Star Trek? I don't know that Tarantino would be on my list.
Yeah.
He likes things from a certain era that's not even the Star Trek era, not even the original, like I don't know where he would, but again, he's a creative dude.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen before guys who you didn't expect could pull something like this out of themselves and they make something neat. You know, so I think the possibility is there just because he's a talented dude that he can make something of it. But I don't know. And I don't know. There would be a case of, you know, the Star Trek people would say to him, well, you need to make this more Star Trek like. I don't know that he would be super into that.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be he's going to make it Tarantino like. And the fact that it just happens to also be Star Trek may be secondary. When in the past, Star Trek is the star, not the director, not the cast, even.
Yep. Okay, so the last series that we have to talk about is Star Trek Discovery. What did you think of that series?
I'm still kind of forming an opinion about it. I like it. I'm not crazy nuts about it. Let me see. It's very Star Trek-y.
Yeah.
It's kind of a combo platter to me of the previous series. I don't necessarily think they had to place it in the timeline where they did, because it, although, you know, it's the missing Spock sister that had never been mentioned before, that I hate to say that it kind of sticks in my craw a little bit. You know, like, oh, the continuity dark makes me want to go, oh, come on. But everybody on it is good. I wouldn't put it in I wouldn't put it in the echelon of my favorite Star Trek series yet. Luckily, and I'm glad it's back. It's more like I'm glad it's on.
Yeah, yeah.
More so than can't wait to watch it. It's like I'm glad Star Trek is doing a thing. I'm glad that we have a new Star Trek-y series again. And I'm glad that we're not doing movies. Well, I mean, we are doing movies. I'm glad that it's independent of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's more akin to the series all the series than the movies. But it's got good stuff in it. It's got it's got good Star Trek continuity in it, while at the same time going off on its own thing, but it's hamstrung to me because we've never heard of any of these characters in any of the previous iterations of Star Trek. So what happens to them?
Yeah.
And again, of course, they didn't exist before. I know. But if it was me, being the Star Trek geek, the sci-fi dork that I am, I would have made the Discovery characters, I would have made them names we had heard before. So you could go, oh, that's where so-and-so comes from.
Right, yeah.
Now I think my very favorite thing, though, is Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd.
Yeah, he was great. He's great. Yeah.
Harry Mudd, when in talking about Star Trek, the Mudd's Women, that's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite episodes. Because Harry Mudd was so different than all the other villains, all the other antagonists on the original series. He was more like an episode of Batman when he was on.
Yeah.
It was more like an episode of Batman 66 when he was on it. And because he made it so different, seeing him again as and Rainn Wilson's great anyway. And Rainn Wilson, if I recall right, I mean, he's a big Star Trek geek. So probably that he got to play Harry Mudd was a pretty big deal for him.
I think that one of the reasons why they set the series in the time that they did, and I can't take credit for this. I think Rick is the one that originally said this, and it made sense to me. But they didn't want to set it post Voyager in that time era, because the further you get into the future of Star Trek, the more you have to show the advancement of technology, and eventually you get to the point where it hinders your writing, because any problem that you write can be explained away with some technology from another episode. Well, if they had just used that piece of technology from season 3, episode 4, then they would have been able to get out of that in a GIF or whatever, you know.
Agreed.
So taking it and setting it before the original series, they can get away with some of that, and they can just tell their stories.
Yeah, so, agreed. Yeah. And I got to say, super pumped about, you know, the final episode, you know, spoilers. About what's going to happen in season 2 of Discovery now that we've had it kind of collide with continuity.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they're going to do. If they're going to recast those characters, if they're even going to show those characters, or any of that. I'm interested. And it's going to be a while until we find out, because I don't think it's going to come out until the beginning of next year.
Yeah, we know they can't kill them off, so that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to blow up the Enterprise and kill everybody in the first episode of the next season, so at least we have that. So, I don't know. My guess would be that it's young Captain Pike. and maybe they, you know, recast a few of the characters from the menagerie or the cage. That would be my guess, that they, or they may not go there at all. This could be way before then, and they, like, how old is Spock supposed to be?
It takes place in, okay, so I read a novel that came out when Discovery first started, and I think it was called Desperate Hours, and it's about Michael Burnham when she was still on the Shenzhou. And and they said in that book, they said that the events of this book take place 2 years before the Vulcan Hello, which was the pilot of Discovery.
Yeah.
And takes place 1 year after the cage. So the Vulcan Hello takes place 3 years after the cage.
Okay. All right.
So they'd roughly be about the same age. They'd be 3 years older than they were in the cage.
Okay. So. All right. Well, thank you. did not know that.
But they did. They did say at some point in the series, they did say that Michael is older than Spock, but Vulcans age differently than humans do.
That is true.
So I don't know. He may look older than her, even though he's younger than her. I don't know.
Yeah. So the fact that they're running parallel
mm-hmm.
continuity instead of making it, instead of trying. Now I gotta say, if they wanted to rescue some of the Enterprise or the Star Trek, the Enterprise series, if they wanted to rescue some of those plot lines and maybe resolve them in a better way, I'd be super into that.
Yeah, there was a rumor going around that when they showed the Emperor from the Mirror Universe. There was a rumor going around that the Emperor was going to be Ho Chi.
Should then.
And she would have been like 100 years old, but.
Yeah.
But you don't know what kind of scientific technology she could have gotten a hold of to keep herself young or something like that, but yeah. Or that they were going to say that Georgiou from the Mirror Universe was a descendant of Ho Chi or something like that, but.
See, they could have.
Yeah, could have.
But like you said, I get it. I mean, they want to do their
show. Yeah, yeah.
And but when you have Star Trek, you got to think about this stuff. But I get it. So I'm curious, and I'm happy that it's out there. More so than I can't wait to see next week's episode. And it was but I think now today Star Trek's in a good place. It's been in far worse places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is like to tie a bow onto everything. I think now when the books were coming out, you know, like before the movie started, when I was when it was in syndication and the books were coming out and then the movie started, I thought, well, this is the best it's going to get. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Star Trek. We're getting a movie every couple of years. The original cast is together, and then, you know, and it spiraled. And, you know, we ended up getting, you know, three Star Trek series on the air at once, more or less. I mean, that they all
close together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we were the fact that the franchise has carried on consistently has been a really cool thing. There wasn't that 19-year break like Star Wars took.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that 20 or 30 year break. It wasn't 30 that Doctor Who took.
Yeah.
I mean, Star Trek has more or less marched pretty steady, throughout. And it's nice. It's comforting in a way that it's still out there.
Yeah.
Like I could crank up the CBS app and don't get me started on that more app. That asinine complaint. You know, we had to pay for the Star Trek movies in the theaters anyway.
That's been my argument. Everybody that I talk to that complains about the fact that they have to pay $8 a month to watch Discovery, I tell them, well, you know, when Star Trek Beyond came out in 2016, I think that was the right year, I paid like $60-something to see that movie. Because I took my wife and both my kids.
Yeah.
We saw it in IMAX and 3D, and we had popcorn and drinks and candy and all that kind of stuff. So it was pushing $70 by the time we sat down.
You had to take out a second mortgage.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, $8 a month for, you know, 3-4 months to get 15 episodes. I'm not going to complain too much about that.
No.
But
and there's other stuff on that CBS app.
Yeah.
There's and I'm super into that. There's it's good for browsing. You know, you just flip through, hey, here's a quickly canceled show that I never got a chance to watch. Mm-hmm. So the CBS app's totally worth it. Yeah. Highly recommend it.
Okay, this is a question that I ask everybody that comes on the show. As a Star Trek fan, we're constantly exposed to little tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, and things like that. What do you think Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
Oh, wow.
You can take your time. I'll edit it.
I think that Star Trek epitomized to me friendship and heroism. While I'd been exposed to heroes in comic books and, you know, other movies, pro wrestling, I guess, you know, Star Trek unified, like, put all that together. In like the Kirk Spock McCoy thing, the Riker Picard thing, the interrelationships of the characters, I think they told me something about the value of like community and togetherness and having a crew. When people have a gaggle of friends, they don't call it a crew for nothing. I mean, that's
yeah.
To me, that like my daughter has friends. We call them her crew, and that's what it is. That's what each of the series exemplifies to me. Not to compare it negatively or not, and again, this is a whole other episode of whatever. But I mean, Star Wars isn't really about a group of people. Like, everybody has their own agenda in Star Wars. Everybody has their own thing they're doing. And in a lot of ways, it's only the story of one character in some ways. But Star Trek is kind of the story of everybody. It's a story about lots of people and how they work together or not. And you see, in a lot of ways, progression from these characters. And so yeah, Star Trek to me is about, I think what it showed to me the value of, you know, other people like Kirk and Spock at the end of Wrath of Khan. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff is gold. That's cinematic gold for one thing. And it's also, and Star Trek II also said something to me about aging that I didn't get at the time because I wasn't as aged as I am now.
Yeah.
And I'm not old at all, thank you. But what I mean is, just because you're old doesn't mean you're dead.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Captain Kirk kept going for a bazillion years after that.
Yeah.
And just because you and the actors also, you know, these guys were not in prime acting age and they kept chugging. And there's something to that. Then there's something that Star Trek has said to me about society as a whole, too. It's like it's the optimism, which ties back to what I think I was saying before about heroism and community and friendship. Mm-hmm. Star Trek tells you everything's going to be all right. Star Trek tells you that, you know, in the future, we're going to be friends with some aliens and we're going to have cool spaceships. And, you know, there's going to be conflicts and junk. But the fact remains is that we do it. We make it. And so if, you know, bogus crap going on in the modern day and in history of from the 60s till now, Star Trek tells you that all turns out okay.
Yeah.
So that I believe, is my final answer.
Okay.
The Prime Directive is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podcast Addict on the Android Store, as well as on our website at cosmicpotato.com. Make sure you leave a 5-star rating and a review to help more people find the show. Every fan has a story. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, you can send us an email at cosmicpotato.com, and we'll arrange a time for you to tell us about your prime direction.